You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to the official Thomas Hasal Show, driven by Continental, the official Thomas Hasal Show of MLSsoccer.com. You can find us on YouTube for the full viewing experience if you are listening on a podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, boom, you're doing the right thing. You can also find us on all your podcast platforms. My partners in soccer today, I am Thomas Hasal, joined by Thomas Hasal in Cape Cod, and Thomas Hasal, of course, in Long Island City. We will have Jonathan Mensa coming up later this show to ask him about Thomas Hasal and break it all down. This is the MLS show you guys all wanted. I am still jacked up. Even though Vancouver lost, I got the Vancouver jersey behind me. I've had it up for 2 months. Now I can wear it with pride. Let's go. You guys have to be happy right now.
I wasn't ready for that. It was a long, late, very MLS evening. Thomas Hasal, who looks like a 14-year-old paperboy, was immense in goal for Vancouver. And it was like, this is a league of chaos in a lot of ways. And, you know, this summer and this tournament has provided some of the very best aspects of that. And it was a spectacular performance. And this is how legends begin.
I guess I'll just second that as Thomas Hasal showing that he's ready to step up. We saw Crepeau make unbelievable saves last year, and I don't know what they're doing. The goalkeeper coach must be on top of things, because these keepers, if you have to rely on them to stay in games, it's also troubling.
But Charlie, everyone likes touches. So if you're a goalkeeper who averages 22 to 33 shots against, you're having a good game. You're in the flow of the game. You're feeling good.
That's one way to look at it. That's definitely one way to look at it.
That's how you breathe. You've got the next generation of Canadian goalkeepers.
Those are the teams I love to play against.
Charlie would have been camped out on the six, ripping pot shots at a paper boy. It was epic.
That's basically what happened last night. Like, the Caps were defending in his lap for the entire 90 minutes. They gave up 36 shots. They got out shot 36-8. And you're like, wow, that's a lot. But then you look, and that's what happened to them in the group stage as well. Like, they, over the course of this tournament, I think they got outshot something like 110-27. This is what the job is if you're going to be the goalkeeper for Vancouver. And it was like, this should have ended 2-0 or 3-0. And a tip of the cap to Thomas Hasal, because he made some really wonderful saves. I think if you're Sporting KC's attackers, probably frustrated with yourselves, probably looking at your goal bonus and thinking, damn, I left some money on the table. But like, this game played out almost exactly how you would expect a tournament game to play out in these circumstances, where one team is so much better and so much more favored than the other.
But you also need another team to come and dance. And you had Derek Cornelius throwing in blocks left and right. I think Russell Tybert would have still been running if they let him. He was like, not ready for PKs. He's like, let's play 30, 40, 50 more minutes. And we'll talk about this, you know, coming up. Mark Dos Santos had some positive things to say coming out of it. But I think Andrew Wiebe in our preview show asked, what does Vancouver need to see this year? And it was anything positive or culture. And this is only 4 games in a tournament, a weird scenario. But you know, everyone in the Vancouver fan base feels right now what they were looking for from 2020. Now the hope is they get to play more games and they can do it with like maybe the 11 other players on their roster that weren't in Orlando, which they keep mentioning fairly, but now they have to play better when they get those guys. We are actually getting Jonathan Mensa on the show. That was real. I wasn't joking about that. We probably won't ask him about Thomas Hasal as much, but we have a lot to ask him about. And yes, I think... Was it the Charleston Battery that had a coaching change? Someone down south changed coaches recently, and I don't quite remember who, but we'll talk about that coming up. We've got names for you. We've got ideas. What does Atlanta United have to do going forward? What are the possibilities for them? Let's start off with a couple pieces of news. 0 COVID-19 tests once again, coming out of the last round of testing, and the MLS is back bubble in Orlando. So that's great news to hear. And the Houston Dash have won the NWSL Challenge Cup, the first team sport league to come back in the United States. Their tournament finishing at Rio Tinto Stadium. Rachel Daly dominating and winning the championship. Why? Because that's my homie. Let's go, Rachel Daly. I called her first two ever soccer games on this continent, and she scored like 19 goals in those two games, and she continues to score 19 goals against everyone. So that was fun to watch. Congratulations to them. Congratulations to everyone, I think, involved with the NWSL. Fantastic tournament, quality soccer. Everyone was safe. Great coverage of it, and we hope to continue to see that going forward in 2020 and 2021. If you enjoy it, go find coverage of it. Show people that you care and that you want to talk about it. One thing to throw out there, if you haven't heard about this story, Jaime Moreno had a golfing accident and potentially has lost vision in his left eye. He is uninsured right now. So the Barra Brava are putting together a GoFundMe. Last time I checked, it has already raised $45,000 for potential surgical needs for him. We talked about him a lot when we did the Mount Rushmores in this league. He has been in this league. He has been in the DC area for his entire career. He loves it. He's done so much good for so many people. Now an opportunity for us to do a little good for him. So you could just search his name and you'll see the stories that have been written by Stephen Goff and Pablo Maurer and other people in that area that will link you to the GoFundMe page. Let's get back to MLS is back. You can watch MLS Today coming up tonight before and after every single knockout game going forward. So the games are all night games, no more 9 a.m. games. I know Charlie's really upset about that, but we're going to keep Doyle up as long as humanly possible, because I think there's a chance that if we do this long enough, we could have an ETR that Doyle doesn't even remember. And if we get a blackout Doyle ETR on exhaustion, who knows what goes on? That's the goal. That right there. Tom Thibodeau, I'm going to play him every minute and see what I can get out of him at the end of this.
Just call me Jimmy Buckets. Just call me Jimmy Buckets.
And I cannot wait to see you blow up a practice. Ooh, it's going to be good. Doyle said it. Vancouver, 11 p.m. Eastern time start, local start. 11 guys down, a 21-year-old goalkeeper. No backup goalkeeper in the game, in a bubble during a global pandemic. I think Felipe is subbing Josie on Twitter during the game. Ali Adnan's talking to cameramen.
They were going to throw Anders in goal. If Hassel had to come out and say producing Anders was going to have to, get rid of all his Sounders gear, throw on a caps kit, and hop in goal. I was ready for that at that point.
I would assume Anders purposely trying to be bad for Vancouver would actually be better than Anders trying to be good for Seattle. So I have a decent chance. Doyle mentioned it, but XG, 3.21 to KC, 0.33 for Vancouver. But Doyle, it was fun. I love these games where one team pours it on, the other team's scrambling, and it starts to reach a point where the other team's just not going to score, no matter what they do. Yeah. And it kind of got there pretty quickly in this game. Hassel makes like the one off Johnny Russell, where Russell didn't even see it coming, and then Hassel makes the save. It was just like energy. It was intense. It was one of those moments where everyone's watching, everyone's making jokes, everyone's texting about it, but it was awesome to watch.
It was. And after that first 15 minutes, which was like just a complete barrage from Sporting Kansas City, and it was still 0-0, and you're like, oh man, something special and something potentially very memorable is happening right here. And it got to the point where I think with 15 minutes left to go, I tweeted, I was like, this is Sporting Kansas City is really going to lose this one in penalties, because like, Vancouver had no business being in that game. They barely went forward. I think they had like maybe two moments. One was a deflected shot. They played their left back at left midfield. They used three defensive midfielders. They didn't start Jordy Reyna, who's their best attacker. It was like, this is very clearly aiming towards either like a late, what they did against the Fire, just a couple of counterattacks, or penalties. And of course, it ended up in penalties. And then that is where we forgot. Like, I was tweeting during the game, I forgot, it's Tim Melia. Tim Melia is literally, by the numbers, the best penalty stopper in MLS history. He stopped something around 40% of all the penalties he's faced in regular play. He is now 5-0 in penalty shootouts. That includes huge runs in the 2015 and 2017 U.S. Open Cups. And he made it look like child's play when it came time to go up against those Caps penalty takers.
Don't disrespect Nick Raimondo. That's all I'm going to say.
It's not disrespecting Nick Raimondo, but by the numbers
and
by the trophies, it's actually Tim Melia who has been better over the course of his career. Numbers are numbers.
Sorry, Charlie. Stats don't lie.
These facts don't care about your feelings.
Don't disrespect Nicky Raimondo.
But so I talked about the Vancouver side. You got to have some confidence. I think as a fan base, you would have enjoyed what you saw just from a pure, like, the connection of the team, the will to try and stay in that game. Charlie, on the flip side, for SKC, this is a team people picked to potentially win this thing. They were almost out in the group stage, and they were almost out in the quarterfinals against a team that, I'll say it again, was missing 11 players, was last in the MLS last year, and hadn't really had any games to get themselves together. And SKC poured on the chances, which is the opposite of what we've seen. They've scored but struggled defensively, and this was a little bit of a different mix.
Well, SKC is definitely trying to figure things out as they go. They have attacking pieces, but we've always questioned their defensive players. Are they up for the challenge? Are they on the same page? Are they checking? Are they going? Are they putting on the right pressure? Are they making the right decisions? That's been the problem. That's been the really, of course, Vancouver is a team that's not going to really threaten you with breaking you down in combination play. They're a team that capitalizes on transitions, you know, the fast breaks and free kicks, set pieces. That's Vancouver. You have Anand who can strike a ball from distance. You get lucky here and there. You put teams away, and then you have a goalkeeper in Hassall that can stand on his head and keep you in games and ultimately have you win games. They beat Chicago Fire because of you have this rain delay, and then they came out. Jordi Reyna comes out. He's like a shot out of a cannon, scores a goal, creates a goal, and next thing you know, they're in the group stage. But this Vancouver side, we knew they weren't talented enough to be one of the teams that making it out of a group. But fortunately, they had a goalkeeper who was on fire, and they were able to capitalize on their opportunities. KC, on the other hand, is a team that's you have Alan Pulido, great as he is, and he made a smooth transition into the team. But you still need more. Johnny Russell needs to be playing at a higher level. Alan Pulido needs to be finishing his chances. He gets in front of goal. He has great touches. The awareness is there. He has all of those factors that make you a great striker. But you got to finish your chances. We saw what happened to the New England Revolution. You can play well, but if you're not going to finish your chances, Gustavo Bo has 7-8 shots on goal, but you're not putting the ball in the back of the net. You're not going to win games. And so for Sporting Kansas City, kind of like New York City, things haven't gone well, but you're still getting results. You're still making it to the next round. At some point, you got to turn it on. So hopefully, you know, in their next match, they're ready to go.
I've heard that they're just going to cancel actually, the next rounds because Thomas Asal's out. So the tournament's over.
You're just really going to beat this bit to death, aren't you? You're just going to.
I loved everything about that.
It was fantastic, and it does feel like he came out of nowhere, right? Because he was a third string keeper. But this is a kid who has been part of the Canadian youth national team setups. This is a kid who was part of the Whitecaps Academy in Saskatchewan. So the Whitecaps, because of the way the academy system works, they're able to set up satellite academies basically everywhere west of Ontario, and that's where this kid came from. It's actually how they found Alfonso Davies, right? He was elsewhere in British Columbia.
Edmonton.
He was in Edmonton. So this is you get out of it what you put into it. And there is talent in Canada. There is talent in the United States. And the Caps, to their credit, have built a system that identifies it. And then when the time comes, they're not afraid to use it. And they reaped the reward last night, and hopefully long term. I can't believe this cat is biting me so much. Hopefully long term with the kid's performance. But you know, as for Sporting, if you look at their stay during this tournament, they were so much better than Minnesota United until Melia got sent off. Then they struggled in that second game without Melia. Then they were the only team on the field against RSL. And they were frankly the only team on the field in this one. So I'm actually pretty confident that they are who we thought they were, and that last night was just a little bit of that midsummer MLS magic. I think this is an apex, you know, could win the title team. I think that's what we're seeing with the Sporting team. Though I do have a question about the central defense, obviously, because they have looked flimsy at times. And, like, nobody talked about this, but Graham Smith started last night.
I was about to say, you just said an apex team with Graham Smith starting at center back.
I mean, Graham Smith had some nice moments, right? He, like, let's not dismiss him yet. There are a lot of good center backs who have developed later in this league. But, like, I think it's worth noting that Matt Beisler did not start a knockout round game for this Sporting Kansas City team. And Peter Vermes, over the 11 years or 12 years he's been managing Matt Beisler now, has periodically kind of like tried to bench him. Has periodically been like, okay, you're no longer a starter. And Beisler always sort of works his way back into the starting lineup. It's weird to see this happening during a tournament, though maybe he just had a knock or maybe he decided it was just rest. But it's something to keep an eye on going into the quarterfinals, potentially beyond, for Sporting KC.
He didn't start the last two games. SKC moving on to play Philadelphia. That will be on Thursday night coming up. So the first quarterfinal game. They will play Philly, which I didn't have next in the rundown, but I can do whatever I want because MLS is back, baby. So let's go straight there. Philadelphia Union knocking off New England 1-0 in their matchup. Charlie, you mentioned New England, a ton of shooting shot opportunities in other games. What did you feel like? Because this was, we thought, the tightest game maybe coming into this round. How did you feel coming out of it?
I felt that it was there for New England to take. And full credit to Philadelphia Union. They're just grinding out results. They don't play the best football. They don't connect passes and switch fields and make it look pretty with combination play. They have Sergio Santos and Kasper Schubilko up top, and they play the diamond. They play the diamond midfield with Alejandro Bedoya tucked in with Montero, and then Aronson up top, who sometimes looks like a third striker because he pushes so high. And you try and create those mismatches. You'd pull center backs out of position. You'd make those inside outside backs tuck in, which allows the outside backs, Kai Wagner and Ray Gattis, to get forward, although Ray Gattis is more of a stay-at-home right back, even though he will venture up top, up forward. But for me, New England Revolution, without Carlos Hill, mind you, because I think if Carlos Hill plays, they win that game. They had opportunities, and they're not finishing. The finished product is missing. You bring in a DP striker like Adam Buxa, he's there to score goals, to just finish, not to create goals, not to dribble players and make beat them 1v1, just to get in the box and finish a chance. And a player like Adam Buxa, you're only going to get 1, 2, 3 chances a game. You got to finish your chances, especially with Carlos Hill off the field. You're not going to get many. So when you do get the opportunity, you got to finish. And Gustavo Bow was brought to fill in for Carlos Hill. So he's brought into the midfield, play a little bit higher, but you're taking him away from his golden spots. That's where he likes to be, in advanced positions where he's around the goal. Now, if you drop him deep to create for everyone else, you're taking away your best goal scorer now. And so I think you saw the Revolution getting to the final third and not having the answers because you're missing Carlos Hill and you're bringing people out of position. They started Tejan Buchanan, young rookie, second year player. Not enough experience, looked a little bit raw. He has shown flashes like, man, he can be dynamic and dangerous in Major League Soccer, but he's not ready yet. So I think it's a missed opportunity for the Revolution.
Doyle, did you see development from Bruce year one to this tournament? Or is that not fair to even look for?
Yeah, I think it's not fair to even look for just because of everything that's happened in 2020 and tournament play. So it's very different from regular season play. I would say I've seen development in terms of New England's depth. They've drafted well. Like Charlie said, Tejan Buchanan wasn't quite up to it the other day, but he has that under his belt now, and he has talent. And next time they call on him, maybe he's ready. Kessler has looked good. I think so their central defense has more depth. Central midfield is still an open question. I think Kellen Rowe has won a spot. I still think the six is questionable. Brandon Bye's leap has been spectacular. He has been, and he's still, you can see he's still learning the game. He still got caught out for, on the goal. His reaction wasn't quick enough, but he had a spectacular tournament. So I think in all, you should be pretty happy with the performance if you're New England. And on top of that, they have Matt Turner, who is just, he's been amazing. He has been amazing through 50 games. I think he's like maybe the best shot stopper in terms of consistency and then making the spectacular save. He is maybe the best that we have seen through 50 games. But on the other side, Andre Blake has been the MVP of this tournament. It's not Diego Rossi. It wouldn't be Io Akinola. It's not going to be, Alan Pulido. Through four games, Andre Blake is the MVP of this tournament because Philadelphia is not really creating anything. They're sort of committed to this 4-4-2 diamond for the first hour or so. And Jim Curtin, I thought his press conference was very good in sort of like delineating why they use it and how it wears teams down and kind of opens them up for the final half hour, which is very similar to what they did last year. But they're still giving up chances. And without Harris Madunian in, who they have not been able to replace in terms of how he orchestrates the game. Like last year, Philadelphia was one of the most beautiful teams in the league to watch. They used the ball. They broke you down. They went side to side. They hit the pockets. They broke lines with their passes, all that. It's not quite there without Madunian in. They haven't figured that out, and they haven't been able to press their way to goals after goals. So it's put a lot of pressure on Andre Blake. And this is the best I've ever seen Andre Blake play. This is better than he was when he won MLS Goalkeeper of the Year. He saved them against NYCFC. He saved them against Orlando City. He saved them against Miami. Miami had better chances. And then he saved them again against the Revs. And it's like, okay, it's a tournament. You're riding a hot keeper. You could ride him pretty hot, pretty far when he's going like this.
I would definitely agree with you. As he's a front runner amongst the MVPs, but Darlington Nagbe is the outright MVP of the tournament.
Over Charlie's dead body, giving an MVP to a goalkeeper in this.
Philly wins?
They played Cincinnati, they played the Red Bulls, and they played Atlanta.
Okay.
All right, well, let's see if Columbus are still the juggernaut after they play a couple of, we'll say, better teams.
Yes, and if Philly wins the tournament, here you go, Andre Blake. But until that time, you give D Nags that MVP trophy.
No way. Right now. No way. No way. He's not even the crew MVP.
Who's the crew MVP?
Zella Ryan.
I thought you were going to say Jonathan Mensah. I was about to pimp the interview. Let's go.
No chance. So,
Charlie, can I make you a little happier? Can you talk about this finish from Santos? We don't do this a lot because it's a podcast. We can't show the clip, whatever. But this is an awesome finish. And to Doyle's point, maybe the tack's not so fluid yet, but they found match winners and they have one who can step up every game. It's not Zellerion every game, right? It's Chibilko one game, it's Bedoya one game, and it's Santos. This was an awesome finish.
It was a fantastic finish, and it came from a Gustavo Bo turnover. Next thing you know, Sergio Santos, who had made dangerous runs throughout the night, gets onto it, takes a touch. I thought he took one touch too many, but then he banged it over Matt Turner's left shoulder to go far post, and he put like a little swerve to it to hit it side netting. And I thought, wow, that's actually a fantastic finish. And then he gets subbed, scores a goal, celebration, substitute.
The celebration, which was well thought out.
Yeah, it was a little stiff. It was a little muscular, like in the gym before the match. But to be honest, I was surprised with that finish. Fantastic finish in the run. And Aronson, I think a knock on him has been, he's not as impactful when the game gets physical, when the game gets rough. You hit him, you kick him, he backs down. He didn't back down, but he didn't have the best of nights. But he's constantly moving. He's constantly trying to move defenders out of the space and allowing Shabioko and Sergio Santos to get a little bit more, have a little bit more space and opportunities to get on the ball. I think he's going to turn into something special, Brent Aronson, because I've seen his growth from literally year one to now, and his grasp of things and how to basically combined with his players, the runs he's making. And then I think he just has a better touch. He looks more confident on the ball. I do think he's going to be leaving MLS in after the season, possibly maybe next summer because of coronavirus and everything. And Matt Turner is another player who I expect to leave. I know teams are already interested in him, and having a European passport now makes you a little bit more attractive. So Matt Turner and Brandon Aaronson are two players I think are definitely bound for Europe in the next 6 months.
Doesn't need a European passport to be more attractive. That was a good looking man, but does make him easier to get in the professional soccer team. Brandon Aaronson, the rumors coming out of this game. I think Taylor Twellman, a few Bundesliga teams, a Belgian side, Celtic, who have also been linked to Mark McKenzie. And how often have we seen a club, especially like Celtic, find maybe a pipeline and just continue to use it? I thought they brought in a couple of Hondurans. They've done it in the Middle East, whatever. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully Brendan Aaronson wins a trophy before that and then can hand Andre Blake an MVP alongside that. So fingers crossed for Philly. Let's get into the next one, though. Orlando knocked off Montreal 1-0. Orlando flying high now, four straight wins. And, you know, there's now debate how good they were last year and what the pieces were and what Oscar Pereja has brought. I thought this quote from Tesh Akindele that was interesting. And this is a guy who played for Pereja before, so knows him. And he said, people ask me this a lot, what's gone better? I keep saying the same thing. It's intensity. Tesho said, Oscar just brings a different level of intensity than most coaches. The level of practice is higher. The standards that are expected of us in the game are higher. Even off the field, these guys are watching video 24/7. They have everything prepared. They have a plan B prepared. And that mindset is infectious. And I think Doyle, to a level of like, maybe it got stale in Dallas, but this is who Oscar Pereja is. Maybe it got stale for him in that maybe he stopped working for the details. Maybe it wasn't 24/7 for him if it got a little more turnkey. And now he comes into a new club, a fresh program, and he's the guy we know, which is he can get a group together and he can get them to be better than what they are.
Yeah, I mean, to contextualize his stint in Dallas, he was there for 5 years. And that's a long time to keep it fresh in any managerial job in the world. You don't see a lot of that overseas. I do think you see a little more of it in MLS, but not a ton. There aren't a lot of guys who make it to year five. But he does seem to have come back refreshed. And I don't want to say he has new ideas, because at times when he was with Dallas, that team played beautiful soccer. But oftentimes they were super pragmatic. Just get guys behind the ball. They always had fast wingers, you know, like spray, get, you know, whether it's Castillo on one side or Barrios on the other side, get those guys into transition, run behind the defense. And maybe it was a little too much of that by the end. And I thought that's what we were going to see with Orlando City, but it's not. They're building from the back. He's doubled down on guys who can pass the ball. Like, I thought Ori Russell was cooked in MLS. I just thought he wasn't going to be enough of a force multiplier with his distribution and his comfort on the ball to sort of make up for his lack of defensive range. But they found the right balance with that in central midfield. And then what we saw in this game was the trump card, which is Mauricio Pereira, the little Uruguayan number 10. He seems to be their Maxi Morales or their Nico Ladero. And in this one, they actually used him as a decoy. The previous game, they had run everything through him. He had 75 touches, most on anybody on either team. In this game, he had fewer touches, but they used him to drop back and pull Victor Wanyama out of central midfield. To get that six, unplug him from that area, and then you're able to play right through there. And they did it time and time and time again. And that's eventually what led to the goal. So it's plan B, yes, but like if you look at the plan A that Oscar Pereja has repeatedly come up with throughout the course of this tournament, it's been fun to watch. And it needs to be said, like five years of what we saw in Orlando City, it took Oscar Pereja less than five games to get them playing like this, which needs like that. When we talk about other coaches and other teams in the league that are struggling, and we saw it last year in New England with Bruce, like you should not need 2 years to get things right.
Nope.
Matias Almeida took him a month and a half. month and a half is all it took for that San Jose team to start playing good, you know, free flowing, pretty soccer. So hats off to Oscar Pereja. And I hope Orlando City fans are enjoying this, because there hasn't been a lot for them to enjoy during their time. But this run, as with the Thomas Hassall thing, it feels special. It feels like something memorable is happening here.
Charlie, one sec. I want to ask about Montreal, but I want to follow up on Doyle and just say a lot of the pieces all three of those coaches used already existed.
Yep.
So the my roster is not good enough excuse. Pereira obviously wasn't healthy last year. He was brought in because he was available. But so many of the pieces Orlando is using now has been there. San Jose basically didn't change anyone except for one or two players. And New England brought in Gustavo Bowe eventually, but still played a more improved level of soccer under Bruce Arena before they did that.
And that's why I've always said this. If I was a GM hiring a new head coach, I wouldn't say, which guys are you going to bring in to make the team better? I would say, how are you going to make the team better with the guys that we already have? If you show me a blueprint for that and say, I could make it work with this, and then maybe we'll talk about going out and getting a DP or a TAM defender or whatever you need. Like, that's what I want to see from coaches. And that is what Oscar Pereja has done. And I'm jacked about it.
On the flip side, Charlie, Henri, he's had ups and downs. And again, it's early and it's not an ideal situation, but he's in the same situation. He kind of said after the game, it's hard to tell. We've only played five games. There's been a lot of question marks after this one of, can they attack? Are they a defensive team? He kind of fought that off and said, we've scored a ton of goals in some games. It's the balance that we've had trouble with. We talked about Bojan in the last show, and he started at the false nine, and there just was never a presence in the box until he subbed off. What do you make of Montreal through this month, through the time we've seen them so far under Henri?
Montreal are missing pieces, and Bojan in particular has not been impressive. You talk about a player who had the world in his hands at Barcelona, and then it kind of started to spiral out of control. Then he ends up at Stoke. You think, you know, oh, he's in the Premier League scoring goals again, having some success. And then once they got relegated and he's looking for a new opportunity, you come to Montreal, and I think Thierry Henry, as well as the supporters and people around Major League Soccer, were hoping for a Bojan that resembled more of the Barcelona Bojan than the relegated Stoke City Bojan. And we just haven't seen enough. You maybe saw a flash here or there, but that's about it. So when you look at this Montreal side as a whole, I love Zachary Broguiart and his pace and his willingness to get forward. I like that they brought in Louis Binks, the English center back, the young English center back who's looked comfortable at times, has been sure on the passing out of the back, timely tackles. Orgio Cuanco, up and down, not a consistent. Samuel Piet, this is a player who is purely a six, purely. Yet in this system, we've seen him trying to be the playmaker or try and get on the ball. So as a opposing team, you say, all right, let's close down all the other options. Don't let Tyder get in the ball. Don't let Bojan get in the ball. Force Piet to make the game. He can't do it. So when you close him down, all of a sudden you're creating turnovers or a loss of possession every single time. So that's been a big Achilles heel for Montreal Impact. And then Wanyama's new. He's a big presence in the midfield. He will tackle you. He'll make the smart play. But he's not covering a ground. He's not going box to box. He's more of a sit right in front of the back four, and then he looks to play out of the back. But he's more of a, I'm going to break up plays, get it off my foot, and that's what you get from Victor Wanyama. And then Tyder, when he's good, he's good. But how often is he? He good. So for Montreal Impact, there's too many players that are inconsistent. And I think for Thierry Henry, it was, let me just get the mentality right, which is fight, 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 fight. But that only is good enough for so long. You need the quality. You need the ideas. And to bring that all together, like Matt Doyle said, you don't need 2 years. You don't need, like you said, you don't need a year. It's okay, a month, 2 months, 3 months. You have this long pandemic, which I think for a team like Montreal Impact hurts them. But at the same time, Let's have a little bit more going forward. Let's have these passing patterns, and we haven't seen that from the Montreal Impact. So a lot needs to go into this project, a lot more.
Orlando City wins 1-0. Insert Disney cliche there. Insert Orlando cliche. Insert Cinderella cliche. And maybe it continues. We look forward to it, hopefully, in the next round. Let's get the final game of the weekend before we get to Jonathan Mensa. NYCFC, a team that limped out of the group stage, limped into the group stage. Maxi Morales limped onto the field after a Tijuri Shradi injury early in this game. NYCFC with a 3-1 win. And Doyle, this is for you. Brenda Cahill tweeted at us when we said, what do you want us to talk about? Jimmy Sands, 19 exclamation points. How did you feel about an NYCFC team that everyone has questioned getting this victory over Toronto?
I predicted it on the pregame show. NYCFC was not as poor as their results had indicated. In round one, they got Andre Blake. In round two, Gayes for Orlando City. He was the best 11 goalkeeper for that round. And then in round three, without Maxi and without Eber, they were able to find a way, get a win, and sneak in. They had some good fortune to get to this point, but they had some bad fortune in the first couple of games, and really the first couple of games of the season. I don't think that this team is clicking in the way that they were in the second half of last season under Domi. I think some things have changed, but things always change a little bit, and this is still a talented team that had 64 points last year. And it doesn't shock me at all that they were able to take advantage of a Toronto team that, frankly, is just so slow at the back and in central midfield. And once NYCFC got that early goal, that was it. That was a game over. They dropped their defensive line all the way back into their own half. They said, okay, Omar, come on up, because we're just going to hit into space behind you time and time again. And anytime Toronto turned the ball over in midfield, and it didn't even have to be like a risky pass, but anytime they turned the ball over, NYCFC was off like a flash into transition. This is not how they played last year, but they have smart, talented players, and they were able to identify the opponent's weakness and turn it into their own strength. And they were the much better team and deserved to advance because of it.
Charlie, give me the flip side for Toronto. One of the favorites for this tournament. And I mean, in moments they gave up in this game, especially on the third goal, which then Patty Mullins scored, would have made it 2-1 with a little bit of time to get after it. How much are you worried about Toronto?
I'm not worried. They're missing Ayo Akinola, who definitely makes an impact. It's a huge difference. Pozuelo as the false nine.
I hate it.
Pozuelo as a
I don't ever want to see Pozuelo as a false nine.
Thank God.
Do you want to see Patty Mullins start a knockout game though in MLS?
I would rather put you up there and just say, just run a lot, David.
If I get Canadian citizenship, I'm there.
I'm glad you said
I would run to Orlando.
I can't stand seeing Pozuelo up there as a false nine. Don't do it again.
Yep.
But you talk about Ayo Akinola, who can stretch the back line, make those well-timed runs, and then Pozuelo, being the architect that he is, being able to find those passes and complete them, you taking away from the way they play. And let's not forget, I predicted this as well, because TFC's defending has not been up to par. They've gotten lucky. Quinn Westberg has bailed them out at times, and he's as solid as they come. But as center backs, they've been too out of shape. They haven't timed their tackles well. They haven't stood up the opponents well. For me, there's too many question marks with the two center backs for Toronto City. They haven't been sharp, and it hasn't been pretty. But they've been able to get the job done, because Michael Bradley was able to get on the ball and have time and space, and he could pick those passes. And then Pozuelo. Piatti looked a little bit tired. You talk about the fatigue. I think everything most players have been through up until this point, it showed with TFC. It really showed that, man, this climate, this weather, these conditions have paid a steep price and a toll on their fitness. And I think that's what got to them in the end.
NYCFC finally wins a knockout game.
Yeah. Over Toronto, it makes a difference for them, right? This has been kind of a bogey team for them for the past few years. But to get back to the original question, James Sands was a big part of that in central midfield for for NYCFC, and he dominated Michael Bradley. Like, he made Michael Bradley miserable last night. It was one of the worst games that I've seen Bradley play for Toronto FC. And part of the difference with NYCFC this year compared to last year is they're now having Sands as the six, and Sands is just a pure destroyer. Right, he's almost like an old-fashioned stopper because he does not try to pass the ball forwards at all. He is the most uninventive passer, but he is just a vicious tackler, and he wins the ball, and his reads are very good, and his athleticism, in terms of field coverage, is very good as well. So he sits there, and then suddenly they're pushing Ring forward, right? And in the last year, it was Ring back as the six, and then Keaton Parks as the eight. Well, now you have Ring, who's a more defensive player and a little more mobile. So it's kind of like a safety first approach for this NYCFC team, which at this point makes me think that they're going to lean a little more heavily on playing in transition than they did under either of the previous two coaches.
One of those previous coaches, Dominic Trent, who might be up for the job in Atlanta, and Patrick Vieira, who might be as well. We'll talk about that coming up. But NYCFC defeated Toronto FC. They move on to the next round. We will not talk about RSL San Jose because that will be happening as this show comes out. Same as Seattle LAFC. So we will break down those games completely on Thursday, and we will preview the teams moving into the quarterfinals. I'm picking RSL and LAFC in those two games. So if I'm right, keep this in. If I'm wrong, when the show comes out, just cut this, Chris, or whoever's working on that, Carlos. And then we don't have to worry about that. Either. I'm sure Charlie picked the two opposite teams because we always disagree. Doyle, do you have picks real quick? Don't say why, just what.
No, I'm not gonna give you my picks on this show. I'm gonna save it for the pregame show, which I believe Charlie and I are both on, right? MLS Today pregame show.
Presented by AT&T.
Presented by AT&T, which is on 8 p.m. tonight. And you can watch it on MLSsoccer.com and the Twitter handle and Facebook and probably YouTube as well. So yeah.
And on that note, let's talk about the Tuesday night games that are coming up because we've still got time to do that. And to do it, let's start with the captain of the Columbus Crew, who have been dominating no matter what the opponents have been so far in this competition. Our AT&T call to the field, the Ghanaian captain for Columbus Crew, Jonathan Mensah. Thanks, Jonathan, for coming on.
Thank you for having me on.
So, you've been a part of some of the best Crew teams in history. 2017, your first year, you went to the conference finals. This is a new group under Caleb Porter. Does it feel different? Does it feel similar?
It feels different in terms of the game plan, the coaches, obviously, and some of the players. The same objective is the same. Is to be able to keep possession and do it in the opponent half, create chances and get some goals.
Now, Jonathan, I've seen many Columbus Crew teams. I've played against Columbus Crew teams. But when you have Darlington Nagbe and Lucas Zelarayan in the midfield, how much easier is your job with those two on the field?
They're great players on the ball and off the ball. Sometimes, we see most of their quality on the ball, but their movement off the ball is on another level. And to have these kind of players on your team, it kind of makes things look easier. But obviously, we've been working on it all the time at training, so we know when they move here, we play the ball here, and they make our job so easy.
And then you're playing now alongside a young Abubakar Keita. Can you talk about his growth, his development, and how you guys have been able to form that partnership?
He's, most of the time we speak French because
okay.
He's French, and he's a good learner. Even though I'm also learning, he's more of like you tell him this, he show you that yeah, I listened and I'm doing it. So it's good to play with him, and it's even easier to communicate with him in French.
Allez!
Jonathan, yeah. How many languages do you speak?
I go three. Spanish, French, and my little English that I got.
It's better than ours. So I think you're pretty good. And three languages is perfect because Charlie's French is fairly rusty. He didn't really pick it up and his time over there. You mentioned how easy the game can be for you. FC Cincinnati, I don't know if you know this, but you registered the second most completed passes since that stat's been recorded in MLS history as a center back. How much are you enjoying this role as, you know, with the ball at your feet consistently and those guys in front of you creating openings?
I think, first of all, I need to be comfortable doing it. Coming into this team, you know, Greg told me, you know, we're a team that, you know, want to keep possession and all that. So they've watched me several years before they brought me in. And you know, I was also comfortable doing that. So, you know, as, you know, the years has gone by, I've improved and, you know, the confidence is always high. But at the same time, you have to always have a little chip on your shoulder so that you know when to play and when to go along with that. So comfortable with the role that I've been given. And, you know, I'm always willing to keep pushing for the team.
Jonathan, I'm interested to know what has caused you the most problems in Major League Soccer, because you're playing against a Minnesota team that really doesn't have an outright striker that's scoring goals on a consistent level. It's been kind of a rotation system. So is it a two-striker system? Is it a one-striker system? What usually is something that you find difficult?
I think when you don't know what to expect, you know, because obviously sometimes when we watch films and we see what they did in previous games, we can project and know what they will do next. But sometimes when you don't know what they're going to throw at you, you need to be mentally, psychologically, and physically ready for anything they throw at us. And I've been doing that for many years, so I'm going to be ready for this one too.
So in that group, you lose Will Trapp, who's a leader, and now you're the captain. And you mentioned Abu Kakeda, a young guy next to you. Do you relish the opportunity to be the vocal one, to be the one leading, adjusting, and making things happen?
Talk of being vocal, I don't talk much, but I just want to show it. Because even though I'm with the armband, we all make sure that we always play our roles. We always talk when needed, and we do our best to help each other, because I'm not the one to call small meetings and all that. But, you know, I'm always out there showing what I can do to help the team, and that's my job.
So when you got here in 2017, I think a lot of people would say it wasn't the easiest year for you, that first year. Now, 4 years later, you're captain of this team. How long did it take to feel comfortable here? Did you ever, from that year to now, see this coming?
Yeah, obviously, when you keep working, the results will show. And I was working my butt off, you know, sorry for my language, but yeah. I was working all the time. And, you know, even though some people would say, you know, my first season was difficult for me, but, you know, 2016 wasn't the best year for the crew, but 17, I came in, whatever that happened with myself, the team did well. We went to the conference final. So to me, it was a good season for me, but, you know, people got their opinion. So, but, you know, as like I said, I've been working and I'm happy for my growth.
I mean, I've seen you now, you're leading by example. You're a captain, but you lead by example. Now you've seen the MLS for, you know, a couple of seasons now. What impresses you about the level of competition, the quality, since you've been a mainstay with the crew?
I think generally it keeps growing, which is the most important thing. Any league in the world obviously want to grow, and it's been great to see the growth, you know, being part of it. I feel it, and I like the energy, you know, expansion teams coming in, doing well, like Atlanta. They came in a couple of years ago and they've won it. So, you know, we can see the difference, you know, this league is showing. So very impressed and very blessed to be part of this league.
So you're going to start bringing more Black Stars over here, some more Ghanaians over here. Play. In the league, huh?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when they see one of the Black Stars or any other African player or any other Black player playing in the league and you know, doing well, they want to start talking to the players in the league. You know, how is it there? And when you tell them how it is, you know, they always want to jump in if they get the opportunity to come play here.
Asamoah could still score goals here, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. If, you know, a team is going to look at him and bring him on board, it's going to be really nice for the league.
You mentioned that connection, Harrison Offal in Columbus. How much has that been big for you to get comfortable? What's your relationship like?
Oh, he was actually my partial agent because, you know, he was asked by Greg, do you know this guy? So, yeah, I play with him in the national team and I've known Harrison for over a decade now. So he told Greg, yeah, if you want someone that can play from the back, strong, fast, I think you can go for this guy. So he's a friend, he's a brother, and, you know, I felt even comfortable playing on the right side with him. So great to have him. That guy never ages. He's 34, like he's 24.
So I think there's no way he's 34.
I know.
I'm interested to know what you think of the Black Players for Change, because in Europe, you know, I played in Europe and you never felt that there was, you know, all the Black players are coming together to promote change and fight for each other. Major League Soccer, you fast forward to 2020, all the Black players are coming together and staff to want more. And I'm interested to see, to know what you think about all of that.
I think it's a great initiation because I've played in France, Spain, Russia, South Africa, and I never saw anything like that. You know, from what I said before, the league is growing, and not just growing in terms of everything, but, you know, Black players coming together for a greater cause like that. It's such an incredible thing to see, and you know, we can all do what we can do to push this agenda forward. Obviously, some people might take it a different way. You know, we all got our opinions, but we all know this is for the right thing. So we all going to jump on board and do our best for this thing.
It's been awesome watching the players lead. You're going to lead your side out against Minnesota in this round of 16 game. When you look at Minnesota specifically, what's the keys for Columbus to get a victory?
We just need to stick to our game plan, go out there, play hard, and play to the whistle. Because obviously we know there's VAR, and we don't need to stop and, you know, expect anything from the referee. We just need to play throughout, and we will just execute our game plan well.
What are those training battles like between you and Jossy Zardes?
So I'm always on the same team with him, but
okay.
That's because he's captain.
What about small-sided? What about small-sided?
Yeah, that was where I was going to get to.
Okay.
I make sure that I put him in my pocket too, because if he can beat me, then I'm sure he can beat any defender in the league, because I'm the best. So I will show him in training that, bro, I'm the best. So if you can beat me, then you can beat anyone out there. So I always kind of push him, and he pushes me as well. So it's always, you know, good to have healthy competition in practice.
That's what I love to hear.
Yes. A lot of the names we've talked about, everyone's been talking about with Columbus. One that hasn't gotten mentioned as much, Luis Diaz. You mentioned in training, seeing these attacking players, how good can he be for Columbus and an MLS?
I think it comes down to individual hunger, you know, because collectively we're always going to push him. We're always going to be there for him, but he needs to know when and, you know, where to do his stuff. And we always, you know, going to back him up to bring, you know, his quality on board. And we know he's fast. He got good crosses. And we always expect, you know, that from him.
Well, I hope that you continue to bring over more players from Ghana, yes, Cote d'Ivoire, Togo, Senegal, sure, Cameroon. Everyone is welcome in MLS. And it's sure been awesome to watch you the do Gambia your thing. And the Gambia, of course. Of course, Charlie, yeah, I would never.
Yes. Hey, my father's from Gambia, so he will be proud if we start seeing some more Gambians.
For sure.
We hope that's the future for Columbus Crew. We hope you continue on your run. Jonathan, it's been awesome to watch you guys play. It's been awesome to see the resurgence of this team and under your leadership as captain. Good luck going forward, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. God bless.
Thank you so much to Jonathan Mensah for taking the time to talk to us. His game against Minnesota, 8 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday night on ESPN and TSN. That's going to be one of the really good matchups in the round of 16. And the final round of 16 game, which we will get to preview here, is the Portland Timbers against FC Cincinnati. Just as everyone predicted, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN and TSN. And one person did predict it. I put out a tweet asking what people wanted us to talk about. And Nick Towell said, I feel like I have to root for FC Cincinnati since Doyle picked Group E spot on and everyone judged him for it. So Doyle, the floor is yours.
Yeah, it was less about Cincinnati and more about my thoughts on the Red Bulls in Atlanta. I thought those teams were both dead meat going into the tournament, and so they were. FC Cincinnati has not played well, but they play with five at the back now, three giant center backs, and they have been just opportunistic enough going forward. They have Madunian sitting in front of the center backs to spray, so that gets them out in transition, and they got a couple of ball winners, so they're not as vulnerable as they were in that first game when they just got marked by the Crew. And against the Red Bulls, they sat in, and the Red Bulls crossed the ball 51 times. 51 times against the back line with three center backs who are all over like 6 foot two.
Predictable.
Yeah, just a bit, right? But this is what Portland did last year. So this is the worry for the Portland fans, right? Because this Timbers team, I think, has played so much better in this tournament than we saw in the first two games back in March, and then basically all of last year, when their only ideas were hope Valeri does something amazing or get it to the fullbacks and lump across towards the penalty area. Portland should win this game. They should win this game comfortably, but it's going to be a big test to see and make sure that they don't fall into their bad old habits of just bringing those fullbacks up and launching towards the penalty spot and hoping, you know, a Bobasi can, you know, rise up and win a header, or somebody, you know, scores on a rebound or something like that. They have too much talent to play like that. And full credit to them, thus far in this tournament, they haven't played like that. So they need to show that ability to break down a low block. That is all Cincinnati is going to do is defend. They're going to do exactly what Vancouver did against Sporting KC.
I mean, for me, Portland has the two keys to break down a low block. You give Blanco and Valeri time and space, they can shoot from distance. And when you're shooting from distance, that forces Cincinnati to step up to close that space. And when you close that space, then you're talking about Obobese looking to find those holes in those gaps and then get played the ball to his feet. And then it's up to him to have that first touch to be able to turn and shoot and create for himself. But Portland are well positioned to deal with a team that's sitting in the low block. It's just about getting Valeri and Blanco on the ball to expose Cincinnati in those areas when they're dropping 8-9 guys behind the ball.
We've talked about Obobese a lot. He scored goals, but this feels like the type of game, Doyle, as you said, this is what they struggled with last year. If he can be the central piece of pulling a team together that bunkers, because we don't know what 2020 looks like and everything, but teams will bunker when you come to Portland. It's the reality of the situation, and it's the reality of sometimes you can get Savarese's teams to fall into it. If Obobese shows he can be the guy to help you pick that apart, as Charlie said, he now takes a step above some DP strikers that you brought in as the starting center forward for a group that spent a lot of money in that position.
No, you're right. And I actually think that Obobese's been better in those possession situations. He naturally kind of wants to come back to the ball and link play a little bit. And he's not, you know, he's not aggressive enough with his goal scoring runs. He's still working on that. So I'm looking forward to him in this situation. But like you said, there's another DP striker there. And this is maybe something a little bit different than what they did last year. You could maybe throw, if since he's just putting everybody back, you could throw Obobese and Nishgada on together, and you could just have, you know, Obobese is the target man and Nishgada trying to run. And I don't think we'll see that from the start, but I do expect Portland to be cleverer about trying to send runners through the lines off their center forward than they were last year. And in particular, this plays to Jimmy Chara's strengths. Jimmy Chara is he's a very clever little winger who likes to pinch in and is able to find those gaps and get to the end line and then pullbacks to, you know, whether it's Obobese on the near post or, you know, the trailing runner, Valeri at the top of the box or Blanco cutting in from the other side. Like Charlie said, they have the raw materials to break down a bunker. They just need the will and the discipline to do it in a way that they didn't last year.
So don't forget 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN and TSN. That'll be the moment when FC Cincinnati proves everything we just said wrong for the fifth time in the last week, and then they'll move on and Kendall Lawson will still be Pura Vida and everyone will still be happy. Either way, it should be a fun one. What a great game to close out the group stage on. And then going forward, Thursday starts the quarterfinals. There'll be a game on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So plenty of soccer for you, but only one game a night. So Doyle could potentially sleep or eat in between or around those. But once again, fingers crossed, next Monday, the Doyle went crazy show. But who knows? Thursday's the first one. SKC versus Philly, 8 p.m. Eastern time. ESPN, TSN, and Tevia. Friday night is 7:30. Orlando will play the winner of the Seattle LAFC game. Saturday night is at 10:30. NYCFC versus the winner of the Portland-Cincinnati game. And then Sunday is all of the games on Mondays, winners facing off against each other. So it's a big TBD versus TBD matchup at 8 p.m. Eastern time, which I think TBD has a chance, but who knows? TBD might play well. On the flip side, I know we talked a lot about SKC Philly. So Charlie, just give me real quick, in this matchup between the two, what's your big focus? What's going to win it for one side?
For SKC, it's about being defensively sound and getting Johnny Russell involved, going down the flank, because it's going to be him versus Kai Wagner. And Kai Wagner likes to go forward, but if Johnny Russell and SKC can pin Philadelphia in their own half, they're going to have the advantage in this game. And then drawing Jack Elliott and Mark McKenzie out of spaces, because they will follow strikers. Now, that's their problem, is sometimes they get a little too happy and I think aggressive to follow players out to the wings. And Alan Pulido can draw and drag those players out. And then they need Kyrie Shelton, Johnny Russell, Kinda to come inside and make those runs, because that space is going to be there for them to take. And then for Philadelphia Union, you got to make sure those center backs are trying to make the game for Sporting Kansas City. Put pressure on them. Make them try and cough up the ball or try and do something erratic, because it's proven over time SKC has broken down because of their center back play. So Brandon Aaronson, Casper Shevilko, Sergio Santos, make those runs, drag them, take them 1v1, put pressure on them when they are in possession of the ball, and finish your chances.
So correction, Saturday is a doubleheader, no game on Sunday, 8 o'clock and 10:30 p.m. on Saturday to close out the quarterfinals, and then we'll have the semifinals coming up, and then the final. And if you don't know what's at stake, there's an epic sizzle video on MLS's Twitter that Charlie Davies VO'd that I watched the other day and stood up. And Megan's like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm pretty jacked up right now. This was good stuff." So Charlie, you hit me in the feels. Good work. Go check that one out if you can. Let's move off the field for the thing that everyone's been talking about over the last few days. Atlanta United knocked out in the group stage. The MLS's back tournament did not score a goal. And then Frank de Boer and the club mutually parted ways. Right after getting back to Atlanta, Stephen Glass, the Atlanta 2 coach, will be named interim coach, but you'd expect Atlanta United to maybe bring a bigger name coming forward. So far, they've hired a former Argentine manager and Barcelona manager, and then a famous Dutch international who managed in Serie A, the Premier League, and Eredivisie. Doyle, looking back on FDB, what went wrong and what direction do you see them going in?
I think what went wrong is that he's just such a conservative soccer coach. When they've talked about changing the culture, they focused on nationalities and parts of the world, and I'm not sure that really matters. I think players just want to play for good, smart coaches who can relate to them, and who players want to play fun soccer. You know, we all like watching Manchester City. We all like watching Bayern Munich because they play good soccer. And I think that De Boer didn't want to play that. He wanted to be very methodical and slow, and this position here, and you don't go forward. So it went wrong right from the start. And you could see it in the players' demeanors. I'm a big body language guy, and it was very obvious pretty early on that the players didn't like playing in that. And last year, I've said this a million times, and Atlanta fans didn't want to hear it. Last year, what Joseph Martinez did was remarkable, because early May, that team was falling apart. That team was playing like they had no intention of competing for anything. And Joseph picked them up and put him on his shoulders and carried them for months. He scored something like 17 out of 18 games from mid-May to mid-September, including the U.S. Open Cup final, including, I mean, he was more valuable in 2019 than he actually was in 2018 when he won the MVP of the league, the All-Star game, and MLS Cup. So what he did was remarkable, but it was, I don't want to say it was a one-man show because Nagby had his moments, Gonzalez Perez had his moments, and Gressel had his moments.
But it was a Band-Aid.
It was a Band-Aid, yeah. It covered up. And then they got rid of all those guys, and then Joseph got hurt. And what are you doing? What are you, you're just destroying what was the most fun team in the entire league in 2017 and 2018. And they played this just slow and dour soccer, so you have that. And then the other thing Frank DeBoer was brought in to do was to turn Ezequiel Barco into an eight-figure transfer out, and to turn George Bello into the best young left back in the league, and to turn Miles Robinson into the best young center back in the league. And you can't go one for three. You can't go one for three when that's your job. And then on top of that, you got South American player of the year in PT Martinez, and he has been a below average MLS attacker. It's like you check so many boxes at that point. You've written your own resignation letter at that. You just have.
So how much of this falls on the idea of hiring Frank DeBoer? Like, you have to know what you're getting. And I think from his history, it goes into, okay, does he play exciting, attractive football? Or is this going to be boring tiki-taka or wannabe tiki-taka, old school Barcelona, slow here, 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 and then shoot like a robotic almost? That's not Atlanta United. That's not what the fans want from Atlanta United. And it showed, because even that they did have success, it wasn't like, oh, this is thrilling and Mickey Almiron is running circles around people and then he lays a ball for a tap in for Joseph Martinez and you hear all the horns blowing and everyone's that's not the Atlanta United we saw. And Nagby, as well as Joseph Martinez, was able to bail Atlanta out because of his ability to get out of tight spaces and be getting the ball in horrible spots surrounded by three or four people and still find the right pass or make the right decision. You lose him. Nope, that's not happening anymore. Now it's coming right back down your throats. And so you look at who can they go from, where can they go from here? Who are the options? You need someone with a big personality who is going to play attacking football and look to threaten teams. And it's got to be exciting. That's what Atlanta United needs to be, exhilarating. And if you don't have that, don't even entertain that person.
So I just think we should mention, because you talked about the mistakes in hiring DeBoer. You know, he leaves the club and what Atlanta United has built is incredible. But Carlos Bocanegra and Darren Eales are the ones who brought in DeBoer, and they're the ones who have helped turn this roster over since Tata Martino has left. Whether it was forced with Almiron, he was always going to go. You had no choice, and you had to try and replace a special player, which you won't always hit on. And then some felt less forced in LGP, the way they handled Julian Gressel, the way they've handled Nagby. It felt like there Tito Villalba. It felt like there was maybe some issues with the way, and you talked about culture, the way the club was internally, and they let these players go. Now it's going to be their job, though, to get the next coach. Do you think it'll be international, or do you think it'll be someone with MLS experience? Doyle, to your point of culture is about soccer ideas. Does it matter? And are there any names that stick out?
I think it's international, 100%. I think it's international because that's kind of the way they've gone with Tata Martino first. Then they followed up with Frank DeBoer. They want names, names, names. They want recognition. So you talk about on the global level, who are some of those people that are out there? Now, you're swinging for the fences. You're going for it all. You're going for the Grand Slam. You're going for Pochettino. Is he interested in Atlanta United? I would think
extra
not.
Time YouTube headline. Mauricio Pochettino headed to Atlanta.
Yeah, exactly. I don't foresee that whatsoever. But a guy that would make sense, that has had success, that Inter Miami tried to get, is Patrick Kluivert. That's a player who... a coach who had success as a player, who had the transition of working his way up with Manchester City and then got his shot with New York City, played fantastic.
Patrick Vieira.
Had played fantastic football and then left to go to Nice and has been competitive in Ligue 1. So for me, you try and make that happen. You try and bring him back. Now, other players like Patrick Kluivert at Barcelona, who has been rumored to be a front runner for the manager job, for the first team, that's also intriguing. But I think what's really important is something that the Black Players Coalition brought up, Black Players for Change brought up, and that is when you look at the first list, a short list for this coaching job, there was not one Black coach on that list. Now, I went back and forth thinking about the list, and it's not that you just put on a black coach just because to have a Black coach on it, but it's more of a deeper issue that we're not grooming any Black coaches, and no Black coaches are having the opportunity to become that front list, the front runner on that short list. And when I look at players who have had tremendous careers that haven't maybe had the opportunity to become a coach or become a great coach, I look at these names. Kobe Jones, who I've spoke to personally, the all-time Caps leader for U.S. men's national team, one of the all-time greats, has never had a proper coaching opportunity to become an all-time great. Robin Fraser, who is now with Colorado Rapids, that's one guy who's made the most of his opportunities. But then you look at Eddie Pope. Where's his opportunity? This is one of probably the greatest U.S. men's national team center back of all time. Tony Sane, who I just had a conversation with last week. World Cups, MLS Cups, Champions League, nothing. Minnesota United, not even a thing, nothing. And this is one of the all-time greats as far as being a right back in the U.S. men's national team, right back who's made so much with his opportunities, hasn't even been connected to Minnesota United. Carlos Llamosa, another player who's just been on the outskirts as an assistant coach, brought along. Jeff Cunningham, one of the all-time great strikers in this league, no opportunities. Most recently, DeMarcus Beasley. You talk about World Cups, Champions League, MLS. Houston doesn't even offer him a position, whether it's an assistant for Tab Ramos or in the front office. It was always, we don't know. We wish him the best. Huh? Tim Howard. Where's a position for him? But then you look at players who have had a smooth transition. I look at the 94 World Cup roster. McBride, U.S. general manager, great guy. And I love Brian McBride, what he's done, but smooth transition. Berhalter, Friedel, Tab, Claudio Reyna, go to 98, Jason Kreis, Preki, Ben Olsen, Vanny, 02, Josh Wolf, who's now at Austin, head coach, Boca Negra, Chris Armas, Ante Razoff, who's now looking at MLS jobs, being an assistant with Bob Riley. The only player is Ernie Stewart, that has had a success now as a front office, but he started in Holland to get his career going. That is the problem. Black players are not getting an opportunity to make that transition, to make that jump, because for me, these players all have the necessary experience as a player and have played in Europe, have played at the highest competition, the highest level, but they haven't been granted that initial breakthrough role to allow them to be the next great manager for the U.S. men's national team or the next great manager in Major League Soccer. And so that's the problem. You look at Atlanta United, they're not going to hire anyone that's not deserving of it. You have to have that massive record, that big name. For those Black players who want to be coaches or former Black players, they're not being put in that position to get there, to be on that list. So that's the problem. That's the initial, I think for me, that's why Atlanta United on that initial shortlist, there wasn't a Black name that jumped out because no one's been put in that position to get there.
And it's not just Atlanta United. They're just the first team to have an opening since the Black Players for Change have come about. And this is the point of it. To force these conversations, to have them out in the open and to try and change this, because we said it on this show, Chauri Joseph, legendary player in this league, coached a full international team and did it well and had a style to it. And he gets an opportunity, which is great with the Revs in the academy. But you have guys rolling off the field who are getting full head coaching jobs, sometimes as interims, at least as assistants, as you mentioned, yes, all of this group of people. And you've got a guy who's one of the greatest players in this league's history, has head coaching experience, and can't get an opportunity. And as you said, you need to build that resume to get on a list for an opportunity like this for Atlanta United.
But gosh, that's the problem. That's what infuriates me on the inside, is that you have a player like Chauri Joseph, with everything he's done, has coached internationally, and you have to break through at the under 15 level.
Yeah.
But you have other players who retire and transition right to first assistant or second assistant, and then 2 years down the road, they're offered a head coaching position. That's the problem. That's the big issue. So when I see what Black Players for Change are doing, it's just highlighting that, making sure people are aware of that, because that should not happen. Because you also have players who retire and all of a sudden they're head coaches. And you're like, huh? Where did that happen?
Yeah. Pablo Mascherini stepped off the field and coached. And two, even just Jay a little Heaps, bit more.
Right.
Guys who played with Chauri and Chauri was more central to the team got those opportunities. Not that they don't deserve it, but Chauri does as well. And many more guys do. Before we close this out, and we'll continue to talk about this, as we've said over the last few months, we will continue to talk about these issues in Major League Soccer and in society. So I just wanted to ask, we didn't hear any South American names yet, and that's where a lot of the talent has come from, and that's where Tata Martino came from. Is there anyone stand out? Maybe a guy who's coached PT Martinez in the past and gotten the best out of him? Just push around. Maybe not. Maybe other guys. Is there anyone that stands out to you that could be in the running? Because they went down to Argentina and interviewed Tata there and worked there, and they planned it, you know, in Argentina and brought him up.
Yeah, I will go back to Charlie's original point and say the guy who makes the most sense is Patrick Vieira. But getting a coach out of a top five league is such a giant. He's still the manager at Nice. So it would be a huge get for Atlanta United. The other NYCFC coach, Dome, is out of a job right now. I don't know if Dome
is chilling.
He's rumored to be at the top of the list for Flamengo, which is one of the giant clubs in Brazil. But he would make a lot of sense to at least pick up a phone and call. But your reference in terms of getting the best out of PT Martinez would be Marcelo Gallardo, the head coach at River Plate. He is a very, very good head coach. He is a very, very good manager. I think he's angling for either a job in Europe or the Argentina job. I don't think he's going to come to MLS, but you certainly make a call. Gabriel Hinze is, you know, one of the names that we saw on the list that Charlie was talking about. And he is, I believe, out of a job right now. He just left Vélez Sarsfield. Very, very interesting style of play for them. And I think that one that could translate in MLS. But I'm going to get back to my own original point. I don't think it matters as much where they're from. I'm not saying it doesn't matter at all, but like...
Well, one of the things with DeBoer was they wanted someone who spoke Spanish at least.
Yeah.
Who could at least bridge that gap.
And I am fine with having that as like a prerequisite. Mm-hmm. You have to speak English and you have to speak Spanish at least well enough to do what Tata did in the locker room and keep it knit together.
And Dome did in New York.
Tip of the cap to Michael Parkhurst for doing and Brad Guzan for doing that as well. But I think that the first thing you have to look at if you're Atlanta is, are they going to play the style of soccer that we want? And just because a guy is Argentinian or Chilean or Brazilian doesn't mean that it's going to be, and we're seeing it in LA with Guillermo Barros-Skelotto. Like, that is the most regressive sort of English Championship or League One style of soccer in the league right now. So, you know, make it a comprehensive search. Bear style of play in mind. Bear culture in mind. And bear everything that Charlie said about opportunities for Black players and Black coaches in mind, because it's something that we've been falling short on as a league for years and years. And, you know, people are working hard both in the league HQ and in the Black Players for Change to try to change it. And Atlanta's been a really forward-thinking organization in a lot of ways. Given that they are the Black capital of America, it would be great to see them be really forward thinking in this way as well.
I know Oguchi Onyewu is free. That's all I'm going to say. I know
he's got a podcast, Charlie. He can't drop that. Podcasting is the peak, then coaching, then playing.
DeMarcus Beasley and Oguchi Onyewu are ready to go. You talk about Black players in this country that have done it on every level and who are willing to, you know, learn, sit, learn, talk, because for most of these jobs, it's about player experience, what you did as a player, what you learned, what you saw. And you're talking about players who played in Europe, who had success, Champions League, national team, international football. That is what you can't teach. You can't learn that. What you can teach someone like them is how to conduct yourself in the office, and how to, you know, make transactions and how to deal with the budgets, and learning those things are teachable. But you can't teach the player experience and the interactions and being able to Oguchi Onyewu can speak 5-6 different languages fluent. You can't teach that, and how to interact, and how certain demographics react differently to certain things, and how you can, you know, reach someone from Brazil. How can you reach someone from Italy or Spain? You can't teach that. So for me, if I'm building an organization, I want the best person for the job, a person that makes sense, and a player of that caliber would make sense. That's all I'm going to say.
Pretty good center back partnership with Bocanegra too. So you'd probably win most of your staff games at that point. Atlanta United, a ton of questions right now, and they have a little bit of time to figure it out. We think they have an interim for 2020. We don't expect to see Joseph Martinez in 2020, although Joseph's ready to go probably tomorrow with his work ethic. But it probably gives them a little bit of breathing room to figure this out. It's going to be fascinating to watch. This club has built themselves in this way. They expect pressure. They've created pressure because they've performed at such a high level in their short time as a club. So that'll be fun to watch what goes down in Atlanta. And of course, everything on the field in Orlando. You've got two more games Monday night, two more games Tuesday night to close out the round of 16. The quarterfinal starting on Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time, a game on Friday, and a doubleheader on Saturday to get us through to the semifinals. You can watch Charlie and Doyle before and after all of those games on MLSsoccer.com and on Twitter. And we will be back on Thursday to preview your quarterfinals. And on that note, the Thomas Hassall Show has completed. Thank you for listening. Have a good day.